Chapter 11. The crack stopped right below our base like it couldn't pass the stream, but I still watched it just to make sure. I doubted the base would stay together if the entire world broke apart beneath it, and we still had hours before our next jump.
That was close,
Emma said as she came up beside me. Her voice was so soft that I almost didn't hear her, and her usually pale face was even more pallid in the light from the stars above us. I wrapped an arm around the swaying woman's waist to secure her to me, and she looked up at me with a grateful smile before a yawn pulled open her mouth. It was, I said, but we made it, and the drone held out until it got to the base.
I think I want to go to bed now,
the Victorian-era woman said.
Would you mind if I didn't cook dinner?
Of course, I replied. Why don't you go sit down and rest? I think I can handle frying up some spam for us. I may not be as good as you, but the bachelor life taught me how to throw a quick meal together.
I'm sure it'll be delicious,
my tired girlfriend said before she kissed my cheek. Floppy rushed over to help her as she stumbled toward the white wooden table. The petite woman was lifted into the air with the woolly mammoth snout like she weighed no more than a feather, and then gently deposited her in a chair. He sniffed her all over like he was worried she'd been hurt, gave an indignant trumpet as if to scold her, and then trotted over to check out Phila and Acrasis. Sorry we came back in such a mess, I said when he made his way over to me. But we made it back. How's your leg? The overprotective woolly mammoth stomped his hind leg to show that he was all better. I'd never been more thankful that the translation pill the girls and I had taken didn't extend to woolly mammoths, especially when he gave me an irritated look and then joined the others as they gathered around the table.
I do not ever wish to see one of those things again,
Raz said as she sat across from Emma.
I agree,
Phila said.
Though they are a good source of meat, they are not what I prefer.
We'll be out of here in less than 12 hours, I said, and hopefully the only cockroaches we'll come across in the future will be tiny.
We should keep some bug spray just in case,
Emma yawned. I'll add it to the list of things to look for in the next world, I said with a grin. Floppy, did you eat enough today? The woolly mammoth nodded his giant head and pointed to a crate of empty jars that had once held pickled asparagus.
At least he did not eat all the honeyed apples and spiced peaches,
Phila said as she scratched behind the creature's ears.
I was a little worried that he would overindulge in sweets while we were gone.
He was a very good boy,
Emma said as she patted his trunk. He was, I agreed. All right, well, I'm going to make Emma and I some spam and canned potatoes for dinner. Raz and Phila, do you want any?
I have consumed enough, Dave Meyer,
Acrasis said.
I do not need food at the moment,
Phila answered. All right, dinner for two coming right up, I said with a wink. I grabbed two cans of low-sodium spam from the crates in the back of the jamboree, found a giant can of boiled potatoes, and then started the fire in our campsite stove. Cooking had never been my strong suit, but I'd learned a few things when I had first moved out. And thanks to YouTube, I knew exactly what seasonings would work with the quick dinner. I was grateful for the jar of bacon fat that the magpies had given us, and made a mental note to grab a few bottles of olive oil in the next world that had it. Emma was almost asleep at the table by the time I slid the tin plate in front of her. She blinked slowly as the scent of Italian herbs, potatoes, and spam wafted over her, and then a bright smile pulled at the corners of her rosebud lips.
This smells wonderful, Dave,
she said as she took a big sniff.
Thank you so much.
Of course, I said with a nonchalant shrug. I took the seat next to Raz and then dug into my own food. My stomach hurt a little when I first started to shovel the food into my mouth, since I hadn't eaten much despite all the fights that we'd been in. I took it slow and enjoyed the flavors that I'd worked into the canned potatoes. The colorless blobs had looked bland when I'd plopped them into the cast iron skillet, but they had color and texture after I'd fried them up.
This is delicious,
Emma said after she'd swallowed her first bite.
Did you use the Italian seasonings?
I did, I replied, and some of the bacon fat that the magpies gave us. I think that we should stock up on some olive oil, though, so our cholesterol doesn't skyrocket.
I have no idea what cholesterol is, but I do like olive oil,
the Victorian-era woman said.
I was able to find some in my world, but it was easier to keep the fat from whatever animals that I managed to kill.
Cholesterol is fat that gets stuck in your veins and gives you heart attacks, I responded with a shrug.
I always thought that was angina,
Emma said.
And that could only hurt you when you get older.
Oh, it definitely happens when you're older, I chuckled. But it can happen sooner if you eat too much fat when you're younger.
Well,
the Gibson girl said,
I suppose I'll need to learn to cook with less fat. I may need to find a few new cookbooks, but I do really love cooking with animal fat.
We can definitely keep doing that, I said. Or try some new types of oil, like avocado or olive or something.
I would love to try different types of oils,
Emma said, as she tapped her fork onto her bottom lip.
I saw some jars of coconut oil, but they'd all gone out of date.
Avocado and grapeseed oils are supposed to be good, too, I added. At least that's what the cooking shows talk about.
Cooking shows?
The Gibson girl lookalike asked. Yeah, I said with a shrug. In my world, TV was pretty widespread, and there were a ton of shows about how to cook. Most of them were competitions. It was like the movies we watched the other night. Maybe I can figure out how to load some of them onto the drive Puck gave us.
I would love to watch those,
the dark-haired woman said.
It would help me to improve my abilities. I will continue to eat most of my food raw,
Phyla said.
However, it will be interesting to know how your people consume their meals. I agree with Phyla,
Raz said. All right, I said after I finished my last bit of meat and potatoes. The next world that we go to, I'll try to figure out how to load some cooking shows onto the entertainment drive. Maybe we'll run into another Sol who can help out.
I would like to meet another version of your father,
my saber-toothed girlfriend said.
He was kind.
He was, I said. When he wasn't being a paranoid off the gritter. I yawned so hard that I leaned all the way back in my chair. Exhaustion had washed over me as soon as my stomach was full. But I still needed to do the dishes before bed so that they didn't attract any of the wandering roaches. I stood with a yawn and started to gather Emma's and my plates.
I'll do the dishes,
Emma said as she took them from me. You've done enough today, I said, and tried to take them back. I don't want you to overexert yourself and get sick. I can handle some plates.
Oh, no, you won't,
my blue-eyed lover teased.
You can barely see in front of your face. You're going to rinse them off, and then they'll still be dirty. Now go to bed. I'll be there in a little bit.
Well, you're not wrong, I chuckled. All right, I guess I'll let you do them this time, but next time I'll take care of them. I didn't like the idea of Emma slaving away with the cooking and cleaning. We were a tribe, and that meant that I needed to help out. Although the stubborn woman probably wouldn't let me do much since it seemed to put her mind at ease to clean. I shook my head as she began to hum to herself and clean the dishes despite her own exhaustion.
I will sleep well tonight,
Phyla said as she fell into step beside me. Me too, I said. We're scheduled to leave at 8 a.m., and I think that we're going to sleep early enough that I'll be awake. There's no telling what we're going to find on the other side. I stripped out of my dust-covered shirt and jeans, tossed them to the floor by the tent entrance, and then crawled across the mounds of futons that we'd laid out. The shipping container would have to wait until tomorrow, as long as whatever world we ended up in wasn't too dangerous, and then I'd be able to give my girls a sturdier home than the canvas shelter. Phyla followed after me, and her lips tugged into a delightful smirk as she saw that I was already in the nude. I watched her hungrily as she licked her lips and crawled across the mattress to me.
Do you have enough energy to make cubs, Dave Meyer?
The saber-toothed woman asked. Of course, I said with a grin. I'll never be too tired for that. She laid down next to me and dragged the tips of her nails up my stomach. I groaned and pulled the sexy woman closer for a kiss. I wrapped an arm around her hips and shifted so that I was on top of her. Her muscular stomach clenched when I ran my hand down her body toward the small patch of curls guarding her wonderful pussy. She was already wet, and she welcomed my fingers as I slipped them inside of her. I drank in her moans as we kissed, and I played with her nub.
Dave Meyer,
she gasped as her tunnel clenched around my fingers.
Please do not stop. You make me feel so good.
I continued to massage the sensitive spot as she reached her climax with a throaty growl. She threw her head back and arched as she rode out her orgasm on my fingers. A shiver ran through her as the last dregs of pleasure coursed through her, and her slitted pupils were saucers when she opened her eyes. She hooked a leg over my hip, and in one smooth motion, flipped me onto my back so that she could straddle me. You want to be on top? I teased, as she reached down to grab hold of my shaft.
I want to take you into me, Dave Meyer,
the sexy woman said as she maneuvered herself over the tip of my cock.
I will ride you as if I'm riding into battle.
Oh, that sounds fantastic, I said as I held onto her hips. She lowered herself down, and I groaned as her tunnel welcomed my rock-hard dick. Her lips tugged up into a mischievous grin as she began to rock back and forth. She moved her hips in circles as she began to ride me harder and faster, and I thrust into her as we both neared our climaxes. I felt her tunnel beginning to clench around my shaft, just as my balls began to tighten.
Fill me with your seed, Dave Meyer.
Fila growled as I came deep inside of her.
Yes! Fill me up!
Electric pulses of pleasure raced through my body as I poured into her. I moaned as she dug her knees into the mattress and then pushed herself down against me so that she could catch everything. She leaned down to press her lips against mine as the last of my orgasm rocked me, and I reveled in the taste of her mouth as our tongues met. She laid down on my chest with me still inside of her, closed her eyes, and then drifted off to sleep with a contented look on her face. A loud purr began to rumble through her a few seconds later, and her tail wrapped around my left leg. Sleep dragged me under soon, and I slept so hard that I didn't even dream. The next thing I knew, it was morning, and I felt completely refreshed. I was alone when I opened my eyes, though my watch informed me I still had about half an hour before we departed.
Good morning,
Emma said. She stood at the entrance to the tent with a tin plate in one hand and a coffee mug in the other. The chicory root smelled amazing, but I was more worried about how she was doing than caffeine. I sat up and studied her face before my attention swept down the rest of her slim body. She changed into another one of her black bustle skirts, but instead of her usual puffy white blouse, she'd picked a cream high-collared shirt with pearl buttons all the way up the front. Her glossy black hair was pulled back into a tidy bun, though the usual strands had still managed to escape to dangle into her sky-blue eyes. She didn't look like she was still as tired as she was last night, and I let out a sigh of relief.
Good morning, I said with a smile. You look beautiful this morning.
Oh, thank you,
the pale woman said with a faint blush on her cheeks.
You look very handsome yourself. I brought you breakfast. I thought you should eat before we go to a new world.
You're amazing, I said. I stood and hobbled over the mattresses until I landed on solid ground, and then took the offered dish and chicory root coffee. The hot brew smelled like heaven, so I took a sip of it before I walked back out to the table with Emma. I plopped down in one of the chairs while the Victorian beauty put my plate down, and I quickly devoured the sausages and tomatoes that she'd prepared.
You look well-rested, Dave Meyer,
Acrasis said as she strolled up to the table. I am, I said. How are you feeling today? You ate a lot of those irradiated roaches yesterday. Are you having any weird side effects?
No,
the alien woman said with a shake of her head.
I'm fine as well,
Fila said as she and Floppy joined us. Good, I said. Soon the dimensional engine, patent pending, started to whir, and the lights began to flicker. It beeped as it warned us that it was time, and then the base was engulfed in a bright white light as we were transported to our new world. I looked around as the light from Honest Abe faded. My hand was on my Glock, and I stood a little bit in front of the girls as I tried to figure out what kind of danger lurked beyond the circle of the base. But instead of the wilderness that I'd come to expect, I saw that we were on the edge of what looked like a town. Shipping containers with two pairs of sliding glass doors on each side loomed above us. They were stacked together with steel beams, and staircases wound their way up to each new level. There were six or seven of the metal boxes in each structure with walkways that wrapped around them, and poles at the top of each steel beam with blinking red lights like I'd seen on skyscrapers to warn planes that there was a building there. It reminded me of that movie Ready Player One, and I wondered if there would be some kind of virtual reality game that I could explore. Some of the staircases were rusted, and almost all of the balconies that they led to had long boxes with plants that tumbled over the ledges down to the next level. They were wide enough for people to pass by each other without any problem, and each stairwell had what looked like strands of solar-powered lights wrapped around the banisters.
It's beautiful,
Emma said. She stared up at the stacks of multicolored shipping containers, The makeshift apartments were probably the tallest buildings that she'd ever seen, and she bounced a little on the balls of her feet in excitement.
"It is very interesting," I said. "They look like they're homes. A lot like what I'm wanting to do with the shipping container we have."
"Will Honest Abe transport something that tall?"
the Victorian-era woman asked.
"No idea," I said. "Saul didn't really specify how tall it went. I probably wouldn't stack more than 3 high. Maybe we can get one of those steel beams and measure how much is cut off during our next transport."
"We will need to bury it,"
Acrasis said.
"And we cannot do that at the moment."
"Right," I said with a nod. "Okay, so we'll have to figure out how to get that drillbot drone working first."
"I can check the inner workings,"
the alien woman said.
"I can tell if something is broken, but I'm not good at reprogramming."
"That's fine," I said. "Saul taught me a few things. I can tinker with it. Or maybe we'll get lucky and run into this world's version of Saul."
"I would like that very much,"
Fila said.
"Do you think that this world will accept Floppy and me? Or should I use the furry convention excuse?"
The saber-toothed woman had her yellow-green eyes glued to the small village in the distance, and her black tufted tail swished behind her lazily.
"No idea," I said. "If the world is more like mine, then the furry convention will probably be the best choice. But we may want to leave Floppy here. I have no idea how to explain a woolly mammoth, even if he is miniature."
I glanced at the woods that started just behind our base and wondered if I could hide the creature there until we left. The maple trees swayed in the breeze that wound through them, and I tried to spot any signs of Saul's house through the thick tree trunks. I would want to check at some point, but I was pretty sure that the paranoid man wouldn't live so close to a settlement.
"I do not like leaving Floppy behind so often,"
Phyllis said with a frown.
"I might stay at the base with him."
"I will stay behind as well, Dave Meyer,"
Acrasis said.
"I prefer this form rather than the flesh-colored one."
"Okay," I said. "Emma and I can make sure that it's safe."
"We will keep the base safe,"
my saber-toothed girlfriend said.
"I will clean out the new cave. Floppy can help me."
The miniature woolly mammoth gave a triumphant toot and stomped his front foot. His ears flapped happily as he trotted over to the empty metal container. He tugged open one of the doors to cautiously look inside before he glanced back over at Phyla and gave an impatient huff like he couldn't wait to get to work.
"You'll need some kind of light," I said. "I think the solar-powered generator should work if we can find a lamp."
"I retrieved a few from the last world,"
Emma exclaimed as she clapped her hands together.
"I thought they were pretty, and I was able to find some unbroken light bulbs."
"Perfect," I said. "I'm glad that you thought ahead."
"I confess that I picked them out before we found the solar generator,"
the Victorian-era woman said.
"I thought that I might be able to power them. I did it a few times when I was in my world, though it was hard to find any electronics that wouldn't try to kill me."
I shook my head as I pictured the beautiful woman in a fight with a table lamp. In her dimension, I'd come across a massive lawnmower in the forest that almost ran Phyla and me over, and the two of us had barely had time to jump out of the way of the quickly moving blades.
"Well, I'm fairly certain the lamps from the junkyard won't attack us," I said. "There's enough light here to power the solar generator. Phyla, do you think you can use one of those until we can put in some windows and doors?"
"I believe that I can figure out how the equipment works,"
the saber-toothed woman said.
"And I will also be here,"
Acrasis added.
"I am sure that the two of us can make it work."
"Oh, I would love to cut a window into the shipping container,"
Emma said.
"Do you think that I could do that?"
"Sure," I said. "We can do that after we explore the town. Phyla, Raz, I know you two can take care of yourselves, but please be careful."
"We will, Dave Meyer,"
Phyla said with a saucy smirk.
"I hope both of you are safe as you explore this new world."
"I'm recharged now,"
the Gibson girl lookalike said as she held up her pale fingers.
"I can protect us if we need it."
"I have my Glock, too," I added. "All right, let's go see what kind of people are in this town."
Emma and I started toward the village in the distance. It was far enough away that its residents wouldn't be able to easily see the base unless they were in the shipping containers on the top levels, though I still would have rather had a few more trees to make sure that no one would notice our strange little group and unconventional pet. I glanced down at my watch to see that we had 49 hours in this world. That put our departure at 9 a.m. rather than the middle of the night, so we'd hopefully be rested enough that we could fight off any possible enemies. I'd already landed in a few worlds where I'd had to fight right away, and I was starting to think that I should just be ready for it whenever we jumped. The town in front of us looked more like a slum the closer that I got to it. The tall makeshift apartment buildings were sturdy enough, but the upper levels seemed to sway in the wind, and I heard the unmistakable creaking of metal as they moved. The stairs were even more rusted than I originally thought, but someone had put slabs of wood down to reinforce the steps. There were shops made of sheet metal and fiberglass all along the thin streets. Windows had been cut into them, and peeling leather stools were attached to the bars where residents sat and ate their lunches. The smell of broth and seafood wafted into the air, and grease clung to everything like I'd just walked into a state fair.
"Something smells wonderful,"
Emma said as she looked around at the makeshift restaurants. "It looks like there's a noodle shop," I said. "I think I have some cash in my wallet. Why don't we see if they'll take it?"
"Would that be okay?"
the Victorian-era woman said. "I don't see why not," I said. "Why don't we keep looking around, and we can come back for lunch?"
"That would be wonderful,"
the beautiful woman said with a bright smile. A few children ran in front of us as they chased after a soccer ball. The inflatable toy barely missed an older woman who pushed a shopping cart filled with paper bags that were stuffed with vegetables. She tutted after the young kids, shook her head with a grin, and then made her way over to an elevator lift that waited next to one of the apartment towers. I looked up to see that there were walkways on some of the upper floors that connected the buildings almost like a city of treehouses. People meandered across the high-rise bridges, and I noticed that there were even more sliding glass doors around the sides of the metal boxes.
"Why are there so many doors?"
Emma asked. "No idea." I pointed to a group of men that had just emerged from one. "It's like it should be for rooms or something, but there's no way that many people would fit."
"They look like they should be see-through, but it's all dark inside,"
the Victorian-era woman said as she squinted at a floor-level door. "There has to be something to them," I said. Two families emerged from one of the doors as we stopped to study the glass contraptions. The mothers chatted with each other while their kids ran off to join the others in the soccer game that was in progress. Everyone seemed happy enough, despite what looked like a very small apartment. And I couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to the doors than met the eye.
"Maybe we should go through one,"
the Gibson girl look-alike said with a mischievous smile. "Let's look around a little more first," I said. "I want to see what Abby can find." I pulled my Namshubs out of my jeans pocket and slipped them onto my face. The lenses booted up, and the Magpie search and find program connected to the satellites with a little ding. I smiled as the miniature digital rigs walked across the right lens, stopped at a file that looked like one of the glass doors, and then kicked it when it wouldn't open.
"You must be new around here," a middle-aged man said.
He had on a threadbare black t-shirt and worn jeans that were stained with paint, and his honey-brown eyes had thin smile lines around them like he was used to laughing. His blonde hair had been swept back into a ponytail, and his chin was covered in stubble. He had his hands in his pockets and his shoulders were relaxed, so I forced a smile onto my face and tried to match his energy.
We're visiting, I said with a smile.
What is this place?
Little Detroit? The man asked. It used to be where all the homeless lived, but for the last 5 years it's become its own town.
Cool, I said before I offered my hand. I'm Dave, and this is my girlfriend Emma.
A pleasure to meet you,
the dark-haired woman said with a nod of her head.
Good to meet you, too, the man said. Name's Steve. I dabble in painting. That mural over there is mine.
I followed the man's finger to see a symbol that looked familiar, but I couldn't figure out where I had seen it before. The bright blues, purples, and yellows of the painting were impressive, and I couldn't help but think of the stained glass that I'd seen in churches. It was so lifelike that my fingers itched to run my hands across it to find out if it was metal or glass.
Oh! That is beautiful,
Emma whispered as she walked over to the mural. She reached out to touch the wings of a dove that had a sunset inside of its feathers, and Steve's chest puffed up with pride. It's impressive, I said. What's that symbol?
You haven't heard? Steve gaped. It's the symbol of the savior of the homeless. He invented the portals, and because of him, we all have a place to live.
Oh, right, I said. I don't know what I was thinking.
Right.
The middle-aged man narrowed his eyes, like he no longer trusted me.
Well, I hope you like Little Detroit.
He waved goodbye to Emma, flashed me a curious look, and then shook his head and wandered off toward one of the roadside restaurants.
"We need to figure out what that symbol means," I said. "It looks familiar, but I can't remember what it is. It's probably religious of some sort."
"Well, if it is, then I haven't heard of it,"
Emma said.
"Maybe it's something that was in your world and not mine."
"Maybe," I said. "Abby, do you know what that symbol means?"
"Good morning, Dave Meyer,"
the robotic woman said.
"I have not uncovered anything about that symbol yet."
"That's fine," I said. "Keep searching. Do you have anything else that you can tell me?"
"This town is known as Little Detroit,"
the automated voice said.
"It is home to low-income families."
"He said something about the homeless," I said as we started down another road filled with specialty shops.
"This world no longer has an issue with homelessness,"
Abby informed me.
"Thanks to a new invention 5 years ago, there is no longer a housing issue."
"What invention?" I asked.
"I do not have all of that information yet, Dave Meyer,"
the robotic woman said.
"Okay," I said.
I noticed more paintings of that symbol, and my mind went into overdrive as I tried to remember what it was from. It was depicted in a reverential way, like the medieval artists had depicted the saints. But I didn't know enough about them to know which one was the savior of the homeless. I saw a few women near an outdoor park that had the symbol embroidered onto their shirts, and I wondered if everyone in the town worshipped the same religion, or if it was just this one area.
"I apologize, Dave Meyer,"
Abby said.
"I will have more information for you in 1 hour.
"Thanks," I said. "Try to figure out what that symbol means."
"As you wish,"
the automated voice said.
"Is that a garden?"
Emma asked. She pointed toward a fenced enclosure to the left where a few people wandered between rows of tomatoes and other green plants. There were thin poles connected with chicken wire, and some of the vines had been looped through them while others crawled across the ground.
"It does say community garden," I teased as I looked up at the wooden sign above the entrance.
"It's beautiful,"
the Victorian-era woman said as she ignored my teasing.
"It's exactly what I want to create at the base."
"You want to start a garden?"
a young woman asked as she walked up to us. Her bright curly red hair glistened in the sun and freckles covered every inch of her face. A soil-covered shirt hung off her thin shoulders, and her honey-brown eyes were bright and happy as she wiped her dirt-covered hands on her heavy apron.
"I do,"
Emma said.
"I have a bunch of seeds."
"It is very convenient,"
the woman said.
"It's all thanks to our hero. If it wasn't for him, all of us would have still been homeless. I'd been on the street since I was 11 years old, but he came in and created the pocket doors. And just like that, we all had a place that we can call home."
"Curfew today is at 7:30 p.m., a drone said as it flew past us. "We thank you for your consideration and are happy to keep you safe."
I stared up at the drone as it passed, but the young woman paid no attention to it. The flying robot had blue and red lights on the top that flickered as it flew by, and LDPD was painted along the side. The curfew warning repeated as the drone continued to float along the street, though no one else seemed to pay any attention to it either.
"What is that?" I asked.
"The drone?"
the young woman asked.
"That's just the curfew warning. They like to make sure that we're not out after dark."
She rolled her eyes as if it was just an annoyance, but a shiver ran up my spine at the idea of a state-mandated curfew. It was like we'd jumped into a more utopian version of the book 1984. And I wasn't sure I wanted to find out if the government was just as controlling. "Why do you have a curfew?" I asked.
"You're not from around here, are you?"
the redhead laughed.
"It's to make sure that we don't have any murders or robberies. With so many people in such a small area, it can be a little dangerous at night. Though there hasn't really been any crime since our hero gave us all hope and homes."
"But they still do it?" I asked.
"Old habits die hard, I guess,"
the freckled woman said with a shrug.
"So who is this hero?" I asked.
"You don't know?"
the woman gaped.
"He's the savior of the entire world. He has a temple down the street. His acolytes come and go, but they're always ready to help, just like him."
"Maybe we should go check it out," I said. "We're not really from around here."
"You must be from somewhere deep in the forest if you don't know who Solomon Meyer is,"
the young woman laughed.
"Solomon Meyer," I repeated. I stared at the young woman in shock.
She just said my father's name, but he definitely wouldn't have become some urban god with worshippers. I couldn't believe that the paranoid, government-hating man that had helped raise me had become some kind of hero that was known throughout the world. It was just too weird. The woman had to be wrong, or there must have been some confusion. Maybe someone stole his identity.
Yes,
the young woman said.
He's the savior of the homeless. He's the reason that all of us are alive.
I glanced toward the symbol as I realized why I knew it. It was the mark that my father had come up with to prove that an invention was his. Solomon Meyer, my father, had become some sort of cult leader.